and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening tonight. Tonight I have with us Dr. Ralph Hallsworth, and we're going to talk about, a lot of things. Dr. Hallsworth specializes in blood viscosity, and he specializes in many treating his patients with holistic medicine instead of going straight to the allopathic route of pharmaceuticals if he doesn't need to. Dr. Hallsworth is a physician in Colorado in an ER there, but we are not attempting to treat or diagnose anyone. Everything that you will hear on tonight's show is simply for informational purposes only. If you're interested, you can email me at evaherr@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to pass your email along to Dr. Hallsworth. Also, please take a look at my new book, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics. You can find it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or you can email me directly. Please go to my Facebook, The Eva Herr Show on Facebook, and like my page so you can keep up with everything that I'm doing. So, welcome, Dr. Hallsworth, and thanks for taking the time to come on my show.
Oh, thank you very much.
You have fascinating information, and you sent me a lot of emails and information, I have to admit, over my head, and I hate to admit that. That's hard for me to do, but it really is. So you're going to have to kind of help me out there, but it's a really amazing information about a new water with a pH that's higher than normal and a hydration that's a little different than regular water. So we can start out there, if we would, and tell us a little bit about you, what you do, where people might find you if they wanted to, and how you came to do what it is that you do. Interesting story there.
Well, thank you for having me on this evening. My background was in a particularly scientific background. I was a geochemist, then did a lot of work with the United States EPA. I was on their technical assistant team, actually evaluated Superfund sites, groundwaters, and then just evaluated for priority pollutants and trying to assess risk assessment for, you know, populations that may be impacted by those. So that has a lot of background that provided me with toxicology, different priority pollutants that can cause different health effects, groundwater, air. So then I became board certified family medicine, and I've just been integrating my previous scientific background. Also ran nuclear reactors in the Navy, and that seems like perhaps an unusual prerequisite for a physician, but it actually gave me the background in fluid mechanics and flow mechanics, physics, to allow me to understand the complete process of atherogenesis, which is the process of heart disease, the plaque buildup, etc. And that's what some of my current research is looking at what the common denominator. We know there's over 300 independent risk factors, whether it's cholesterol, being a male, smoking, diabetes, etc. The common denominator in all of those different pathophysiologies is it makes your blood thick. So a lot of the principles that allowed me to understand that were the ones that I was taught in the U.S. Navy in a two-year intensive, pretty much collegiate-type level, looking at flow metric, you know, flow mechanics, and seeing how those can cause problems. At that time, a nuclear reactor, but now, you know, looking at atherosclerosis.
I'm sorry about that. Does your gallbladder or liver play any role in blood thickness? We didn't talk about this before, but it just occurred to me to ask that question.
Well, certainly your liver and your gallbladder are intrinsically connected there, but yes, as far as your ability to metabolize things or break them down is And I always tell my patients, liver, what's the first four letters? It's live. It's a very important organ. And a lot of the protocols that I use with a Patricia Kane or PK protocol are actually detoxifying the liver, getting sometimes we get fatty livers from insulin resistance and metabolic diseases such as diabetes. And one of the first things to effectively detoxify a patient is to look at the liver and the gallbladder and effectively cleanse those so the patient can be receptive to further treatment.
So I didn't mean to get you off track. I just didn't want to forget to ask that. So tell us a little what this water is. You sent me, I know there are probably several, but I'm using the one Essentia.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a pH of 9.5. And one thing that I personally have noticed, and everybody, I think everybody on my show knows that I had a massive heart attack back in September. And this is the second show that we've done with you on this network, talking about the things that we're doing to, in a holistic path, because I don't want to do the pharmaceuticals. And so you've been helping me do that, giving me advice and information.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of the things that you sent me. And I've noticed when I came in from the hospital, the doctor said, don't drink any more than 60 ounces of water today. And I was thirsting to death, literally. I was thirsting to death. I felt that way anyway. This water, and I don't know if it's in my head or if it really does this, but I drink all the water that I want to, and I don't have problems with edema. I do take a diuretic. I'm still on a few of the pharmaceuticals, but we've weaned off, as you know, the Coumadin, what was it, the statin and the amiodarone. I don't know what amiodarone did, but we're off of those three. And when I use this water, I don't have edema. So why is that? And how does this water help people with heart diseases and other inflammatory diseases?
Well, the water that I've been researching and following the research with Dr. Hanaka out of Japan. He actually was one of the founders of functional water. And basically they take water and put it through electrolysis process where they're applying electricity to it. And one particular anode, the cathode, it attracts a lot of the alkaline earth minerals and basically charges it up with electrons. And if you have more electrons than you know what to do with and you like to give them away, then you are called an antioxidant. So essentially what this process is doing is we're producing antioxidant properties in water. And what's fascinating is that when the research that Dr. Hanaka did, he was published back in the Journal of Applied Electrochemistry. And I continue to communicate with him on and off for the last 13 years, is that the water actually revs up our immune system. It's superoxide dismutase. And then Dr. Fernandez at University of Texas, San Antonio, continued coordinating some of this research with Hanaka and showing as well immune functions boosted in a series of experiments that he did there. I have used it for my patients for over a decade with excellent results. And I'm honestly just learning more the scientific logic behind why it's working. We do know, I just learned last week with meeting some of the Japanese scientists, that it actually has anti-inflammatory properties. And these are all explained to me now why I was finding, you know, my patients were commenting on certain aspects, you know, decreased bloating, joint pain resolving. I've had pregnant women who had kidney stones and literally hospitalized because of the stone, very painful an event. But I was able to give them the reduced alkalinized water and dissolve the stones up, and that kept them from having the lipotripsy. That's after they had delivered a viable baby. So there's a number of different clinical diseases and states that I've used it for, and it's very safe. I mean, it's literally water. The first company to bottle the reduced alkalinized water in the United States is Essentia. I call it Essential without the L, E-S-S-E-N-T-I-A. I've been assisting them with research for over since, 1998. I wrote my first technical paper for them. And lo and behold, the same things that I thought to be true then are still viable, still true. And we're finding out new properties. We recently had one of my papers published. It'll be coming out in May or June. We took firefighters, put them into mock conditions of a fire. They actually were fighting a fire. They were having to take fire hoses up and down a three-story building, performing rescues. This was all done while they were in bunker gear and self-contained breathing apparatus, very similar to, a scuba tank on your back. And what we found out is that we measured the thickness of their blood, and after rehydrating them with Essentia, or reduced alkalinized water, we were able to bring back their blood thickness, return it down to the lower blood thickness that it was previous to the exercise. Now, the short answer here is that the number one fatality of active firefighters in the line of duty is an acute MI. So what we find out that it could be that there's large amounts of dehydration that are occurring while they're vigorously, physically exerting themselves, and that one of the things that Essentia had proposed and was hoping to do was perhaps hydration or rehydration with this special type of water would ensure the safety of firefighters in this generation, generations to come.
That's amazing. So, when I was telling someone about this water today, and they said to me, "Oh, well, doesn't that affect the ability of your stomach or mess up your digestion process? Mm-hmm. It makes your stomach too alkaline to digest your food." They asked me that, and I didn't know the answer. What would that answer be?
Well, the answer to that is that what we do with the reduced alkalinized water, yes, it is a higher pH. That's not because of alkaline earth minerals like calcium, magnesium, Tums, if you will, but more because of the electrons. What we find out, if you give your body more electrons, then it's able to produce the amount of acid that it needs to sufficiently digest food. So what we're finding out is, and in Japan, they actually prescribe this water for dysbiosis or dysphagia. Those are fancy terms for just, people upset stomachs or inappropriate digestion, heartburn, and reflux.
That brings up something that I hadn't even thought about until this moment. You know, I had Dr. Jonathan Wright on my show a few months ago, and we talked about his book, Stomach Acid, Why It's Good for You. Mm-hmm. And so during that interview, I went, oh, my God, that's what's wrong with me. That's why maybe one of the reasons why I bloat out when I eat things. And so I started using hydrochloric acid, and it made it better. I mean, I stopped bloating out. And I don't eat things that obviously make me bloat, but I would bloat sometimes just because, and so that fixed it. But now that you mention it, now that I've been drinking this water, and I've had it, a month maybe? I haven't had to take any hydrochloric acid in probably 3 or 4 weeks. Maybe I've used this water about 6 weeks, because it's been 3 or 4 weeks since I've had to use hydrochloric acid. So is that why?
Well, it certainly could be a possibility. Like I said, I have a number of people with, gastroesophageal reflux disease, heartburn, if you will. And we've even been contacted by other researchers now that have noted that sometimes we get digestive enzymes up above our esophagus into our throats, and that the high pH of Essentia, they're speculating, may be neutralizing that enzyme. So that would be preventing the damage to the upper, esophagus. So that's research we're currently developing, but that's independent physicians contacting us and saying, have you considered this? And so so that's some of the exciting research, and certainly there is some research showing that these peptidases, they are enzymes that we produce to break down protein. Sometimes our valves, there's two trap doors. There's one right above the stomach, the lower esophageal sphincter, and then there's one higher up called the upper esophageal sphincters. And sometimes those things are those little doors are controlled by pH. So if we get the pH out of whack, they tend to flop open, and some of our stomach contents can come back up into our throat. Sometimes it can go down into our airway, so trachea. Mm-hmm. So in medical school, there's an old adage, all that wheezes is not asthma. In other words, sometimes patients can experience this reflux, and where the contents of their stomach will come back and go down into their lungs, and that can set off a reactive airway-type disease pattern and inflammatory. So that's always something a thorough physician will consider with an asthmatic, is do you have any signs, symptoms, potentially of a gastroesophageal reflux disease?
Well, it sure makes a lot of sense to me, because I had not thought about it, hadn't even crossed my mind until you said that. And I was taking it with every meal, sometimes mm-hmm. two with every meal, mm-hmm. and I haven't used a single one in weeks now, and I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, it's certainly, as you know, I worked a year in Dr. Wright's clinic there, Tahoma Clinic, and that certainly was one of our discussions, because it seemed like we were diametrically opposed, him using acid and I was using alkaline, and all I propose is that it's an electron story. How we get the pH is pretty much the tail wagging the dog. It's not that significant. And when I talk to my colleagues over in Japan, they agree pH is really, it's not the important thing. The things we're looking at now are ionic product. We're also looking at oxidative reduction potential. In other words, how many electrons do you have? And if you have more electrons than you know what to do with, then you're an antioxidant and you have a negative ORP. So
before you go on, assume that my listeners have no idea when you talk about electrons in the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we also talked the other night about that new book that Stephen Sinatra and Jim Oshman did, mm-hmm. Earthing, about electrons. So what does electrons mean to our body? And how do we get them or get rid of them, whatever it is that we need to do?
Well, I look at them as a mechanism for, conveying energy in the body. A lot of my colleagues in Japan, I've been there several times and coordinate research with them, and their philosophy is very simple. You're born with so many electrons, you lose them and you die. they look at electrons as a balance in your checkbook, and you try to keep your debits and your deposits and your checks, where you're always having a surplus of electrons in your body. And that's what we're seeing here a lot of, just with the oxidative process. You know, we are a machine, a biochemical machine. We produce free radicals, which take electrons away in the processes there. But at the end of the day, we're trying to have a surplus of those. And I think that's what we're seeing essentially here when we talk about antioxidants, whether it's the 9-10 servings of vegetables or, lifestyle or earthing, as Dr. Stephen Sinatra, a colleague of mine and friend, has mentioned, is these are all mechanisms to try to hold on to these precious electrons, because those are what's going to scavenge the oxidative, the biological rust that just happens with day-to-day living, whether it's physiological stress, emotional, psychiatric stress. We're in a very stressful environment here in an industrial society. Perhaps Americans more than other countries, but needless to say, it's really important to look at these different, very safe and very cost-effective treatments for maintaining your overall antioxidant capacity, because that's going to allow you to have functional reserve, that ability to bounce back if you get the flu or the influenza or get pneumonia or have you're in a car wreck and you need to recover and get back to normal. These are really what's going to provide that reservoir of safety.
I would imagine it would have a lot to do with aging and wrinkling too.
Absolutely. Some of the things, I look at the scientific research on a day-to-day basis, looking at Science magazine, looking at Nature magazine. What they're finding out is, again, it's the mitochondria, the powerhouses, that tend to take the first hits where they break down, and this is where they're, we're losing electrons in the cisterns of those inner outer membranes of that, and that's the leak. And so a lot of the things that we try to do as physicians is to repair those membranes, repair the mitochondria. And you're absolutely correct. They're now specifically looking at the mitochondria of the cell as being the Achilles heel and what makes us susceptible to aging and inflammatory processes.
So let's talk a little bit about just that. When you say, I'm on the PK protocol, and I lost 33% of my heart function when I had my heart attack. And I had a new echocardiogram the other day, and my heart function had improved by, 41.1%.
Yeah.
So excellent. What did that? That's an amazing thing, What did that?
Well, specifically, let's look at how many powerhouses you have in your heart tissue or your myocytes. You have over 20 to 40 myocytes, mitochondria per myocyte. So if I went and plucked one of your heart cells out, that I would look, if I counted them under a microscope, you'd have 20, 40 of these powerhouses. The other cells in your body would have 2 to 4. So there's a tenfold increase in the amount of mitochondria or powerhouses. And this is the area that generates the electrons. It's basically your electrical generator for your cell, and particularly your heart. Because if it doesn't get enough blood flow and enough oxygen, then those powerhouses can't appropriately function. And what Dr. Patricia Kane, a nutritional biochemist, has, which I think is genius, and I follow her work rigorously, is that she's been able to look at a molecular, cellular level and repair the membranes. The membranes really are more significant than the DNA. We had the Genome Project, but that was sort of like matching a bunch, getting all the telephone numbers in New York City and then not realizing whose name they went to or the relevancy to or the significance of those contributing to disease. But what you find out when you preserve the membranes and the mitochondria, then you're actually at the very basis of pathophysiology and correcting those. Now, for example, heart disease, a lot of times you can get breakdown, and they call it cardiolipin. And that, these are the number of the different things on a cellular level that the PK protocol has been repairing for you.
So, and I know I'm asking a redundant question here, but when you say you repair the cell or stabilize, I believe is what Patricia says, stabilize the membrane, what's happening? What does that do for the big picture? What happens in my heart when the cell membranes are stabilized, what are they doing? Are they being still? Are they not oscillating the same way? What's happening? I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's
absolutely.
I don't understand.
The membrane is basically it's a double membrane. There's two layers in it. The top and the bottom layer are fatty. They're fatty soluble. And the middle layers that hold them, the tails, are basically are watery. They attract. So that whole membrane is what protects all your DNA and your mitochondria, etc. Now, when you have oxidative stress or biological rusting, maybe someone had Epstein-Barr, this causes little chinks in the armor. All the membranes, and it's if you've ever seen some of the pictures, it's really beautiful. Imagine a three-dimensional series of ping pong balls just across the ocean touching each other in concert, and then below them dangling the other portion of the tails. And that would basically look as, you know, would simulate the surface of the membrane. Now, when you get them oxidized, they get little what they call rafting, and that becomes porous areas or little chinks in the armor, as I like to call them, that allow viruses to come in and out. And what the PK protocol does is it rebuilds that membrane. It gets rid of the defects in the membranes. Maybe there's a ping pong ball that, you know, excuse me for an, you know, for my analogy, that's been crushed. Then the protocol, particularly the butyric acid, will take that one out and get rid of it, and then allow the body to repair it. And what Dr. Patricia Kane has done and is still doing is successfully analyzing the fatty acids of your red blood cells, knowing specifically what fatty acids or good fats you need to replace that membrane. At the same time, she's getting rid of all the oxidized, rusted, rancid fats in your membranes. And thirdly, she's balancing all of those. So, and I think what I'm seeing is that's probably one of the most fundamental things that you can do therapeutically to repair a cell. And, you know, and I've seen the results in a larger scale with different patients, whether they were suffering from cardiovascular heart disease such as yourself, or from more advanced neurological or neurodegenerative diseases, you know, like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, or MS.
So, let's talk a minute about how she knows what we need, testing. What tests are available? What do you know about? Why would you do a test? Where do you get one? Because you go to most doctors, and most doctors, at least most allopathic doctors that I know, laugh and say that they're useless. They're not accurate. My perspective, and then I'm going to let you go tell what you need to tell, is that even if they're not accurate, even if they're only 80% accurate, that's better than 0% or guessing.
Mm-hmm. So, well, one of my sayings is, if you're not testing, you're guessing, and I think, you know, the fatty acid test is done at this, you know, at the Johns Hopkins, the Kennedy Krieger Institute there, which has been a research institute and for several decades. So they have established exactly what, you know, looking at all of the fatty acids from the red blood cells, which ones, you know, are deficient. And it's specifically the peroxisomal disease laboratory at Kennedy Krieger Institute. So once you have this analysis, and then Dr. Kane takes that and incorporates it with a Chem-18, LDL, CTT, I mean a GTT, and another ferritin. These are all standard lab work that most physicians order every day. Then she's able to know exactly what your nutritional deficiencies are. and she'll prescribe not only an oral protocol, but also an intravenous protocol that will allow, you know, the repair, the balancing, and, you know, elimination of the oxidized or the rancid fats in your membrane.
So where do you get one of these tests, and what are they called? What do you ask for if you go to your doctor? What do you ask for?
Well, a lot of neurologists, particularly pediatric neurologists, are very familiar with the Kennedy-Krieger Institute because that's some of the initial workup for seizures or epilepsy in kids is looking at their fatty acids. But in general, there's, you know, different laboratories that just need to draw the blood, and then that can be sent. Meridian Valley Lab is one that typically does it when I worked at Tahoma Clinic, but there's other labs that can draw those profiles and then send them to the Kennedy-Krieger Institute. And then the important thing, though, is to get that interpreted. And most physicians, I certainly wasn't trained in the interpretation of these fatty acid analysis, and that's where Dr. Patricia Kane comes in, where she is able to interpret those with your other lab work, with also your history and physical, and she provides a valuable consult for a physician when he's treating a patient that is complicated, to be quite honest, or has failed all the standard pharmaceutical methods of treatment, which unfortunately happens more frequently than we would like.
So I sit on the board of a group called the Alliance for Addiction Solutions, and I'm just the media person, you know, but the rest of the people are practitioners and clinicians, nutritionists, doctors, researchers. And we teach people how to treat addictions and mood disorders holistically, with a lot of success, I might add, because we did my daughter when she got raped. But I know of one person that we're trying to help, and nothing. I'll say this person is probably 65% better, but there's still problems, the mood disorders. And we switched amino acids the other day based on Patricia's recommendation, and that helped this person. But then we started this person on phosphatidylcholine. This person doesn't have heart disease. They have a mood disorder, depression, or anxiety specifically. And already in less than a week, that person says that things are better, that something's different, and this person's like a real black and white person, and they... You know, they'll say, I don't know what to attribute it to since we switched amino acids, but since I started this phosphatidylcholine, things are different. And I'll say for myself, within a week, I had brain fog so bad that I couldn't even think. I was actually running reruns on this show sometimes because I couldn't think. And it's going. It's almost gone completely. And like I'm doing a lot of things because Patricia gives you a lot, but I attribute it to that. So it doesn't just treat heart problems, it treats other things, right?
Absolutely, and I think a lot of that has to go back with, you know, our receptors. One of the major agents she uses is phosphatidylcholine, and 60% of our brain is composed of that. So anytime that you're helping rebuild that, and it also detoxifies. I reviewed a number of papers done by Russian researchers, and they used the phosphatidylcholine to prevent drug toxicities. They used it with different poisons that people have had. They used it when specific anesthetics, particularly for dogs. One is called bubuvacaine, which I use when I do small surgeries. But if you get this into the vein accidentally, it actually p- puts the heart into cardiac arrest. And one of the things phosphatidylcholine will do will actually reverse that toxicity of that medicine. So I think what I'm seeing is, you know, and based upon my environmental background, is that we get xenoestrogens. We have a number of things, pesticides, herbicides. These love fat. They will go to the fatty regions, whether they're brain, other portions of your body, and they can basically, cause problems with the endocrine system or with your hormones. And again, all of those are all tied in, as we discussed yesterday, you know, whether it's a neurological issue, immunological, inflammatory, or psychiatric, they all use the same freeway. So if you have a traffic jam because of some of these toxins, it's going to impact on all of those specific areas in the body, neurological, immunological, and hormones, endocrinology.
I'm going to read something quickly off Patricia's site that I'm looking at. Then I want to ask you, get off topic for one moment, and then I'm going to let you talk about whatever you want because a thought just occurred to me. But she says that the phosphatidylcholine helps remove chemicals, pesticides, even microbials. I didn't even think about that. Heavy metals, and it helps with motor neuron disease, autism, multiple sclerosis, stroke, post-stroke, epilepsy, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and we also know that it helps heart because I just told you what happened to my heart. So it does many, many things. And before I ask you the liver question, why should people, phosphatidylcholine is lecithin. Why should people not run out to the store and buy lecithin?
Well, it's an excellent question. And most physicians and researchers don't understand that that's not a synonym. And the reason is that the phosphatidylcholine is in an emulsion form. It's a liposomal form, and that allows it to be absorbed through the body. Whereas your lecithin is basically a chemical form, and it will be dealt with by the body in a very similar form. In chemistry, we have an expression that like dissolves like. So phosphatidylcholine is basically it's a liposomal, so it's going to help get rid of any toxin that's in the fatty portions of your body. Now, if you've ever taken oil and vinegar and shook them together, you get an emulsion, and that's basically what's going on with phosphatidylcholine in the body. We incorporate that in there, and it's an emulsion. We call them micelles, and those are very effective agents in getting in there and, you know, basically scrubbing, you know, scrubbing each and every cell. And there's documentation that she's provided at NIH and other presentations she's done that it even washes the DNA addicts. So what I'm saying is that, you know, we're able to look at the DNA and see what's junk, you know, what's gunking it up, if you will. Just like you got dirty injectors on an engine, you can get, you know, junk on your DNA, and it doesn't replicate. It's like being out of toner, not being able to make appropriate copies on your copy machine, or having a paper jam.
The
phosphatidylcholine helps you eliminate those DNA addicts. And she's had research that shows before and after resolution of these different DNA addicts.
The main thing I want people to know, though, is remember I told you that years ago I researched and found out that lecithin was good for, it was a bioconjugant or something. I can't remember what it was, but I think that's what it was. So I bought 25 pounds. And then it made me sick, and it made me get really bad brain fog. So I wanted people to understand that the lecithin that you buy at your local health store is not the same thing as this stuff. Don't go and buy it.
No.
If you're wanting to get these results, don't go and buy that.
Yeah.
Won't work.
And a lot of the And just because the body's going to break it down in not the appropriate fashion. And so all my patients, I have them go to bodybio.com. All the products on there, phosphatidylcholine, they've all been researched and certified by Dr. Patricia Kane as being a mycelized form of the phosphatidylcholine.
Okay. Now, I have two questions for you. We've got about 18 minutes. You can take however much time you want to answer these, and then you can talk about anything that you want to talk about that we've not already talked about or that we have. The first question, I'm going to ask them both, and you can talk. First question is, I had a liver enzyme that was making my, triglycerides be something wrong with them? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I'd like for you to talk about that and how this protocol that we're doing fixes that. And the second question, it's not really a question, is that Patricia's done some research where she talks about where she was causing the mice to have heart attacks and damaging some of their cells, and she would do this protocol on them, and the cells would start back working. They would start back beating, and not only would they start back beating, but they would start back beating in coherence with the heart. So it's like the cell regeneration. I mean, your heart gets well. It doesn't just get patched up or get better. It potentially can get well.
Yeah, and she shared me that PowerPoint presentation, and basically what she was doing was, they were enabling the stabilizing that membrane again. One of the ways I communicate this to my patients is that think of the phosphatidylcholine as being insulation on your wires. And from a neurological point of view, you have all these synapses that are going on from every thought or every visual or auditory input that you get. And that if the membranes aren't intact, you're going to get short circuits through those. And on the cardiac level, which you're discussing there, again, it's stabilizing that mitochondria, the powerhouse of each of those mice or the rat's heart. So that's, and there was a direct correlation with phosphatidylcholine that they were getting in them and their longevity of their hearts. So, the other issue you were discussing was the phospholipase A2. That's an enzyme that it breaks up, takes out the garbage, if you will. And that's one of the things that this protocol, specifically with the butyrate.
That's the liver, right?
Yeah, exactly where it occurs.
Before we move on, I want to just say this. The point of my asking you that question about the mice things was to tell people that they have hope, that you don't necessarily have to run to the hospital if you have a heart attack and have veins ripped out of your legs and valves replaced and stents put in. There is hope to fix your heart. That was the point of my asking that question. So, sorry.
Well, I think
them understand that.
Right. But there's always a sense of urgency, and and sometimes we need we need to go to the emergency rooms. One out of three heart attacks presents as death. Our medical society today, orthodox, is very good at acute care. And sometimes you do have to go get stabilized. And we're excellent diagnosticians in the modern orthodox medicine because we're able to determine exactly what's wrong. And then we do heroic measures to, have people live. I work in an emergency room and a very rural area, and I have to stabilize patients and then life flight them into Denver or other large primary care units. But what I guess I'm trying to say is, after the initial threat of death and the patient has been stabilized, then that is the time to reflect and, with an informed consent and take a full review of what's out there for long-term care.
Thank you.
For a patient.
I just wanted them to know that. So, and now the liver thing. What is the importance of that liver enzyme thing?
Well, it's, we call it beta oxidation. In other words, there's these very long chain fatty acids. They are, those are the ones that you mentioned there. And really, we got to get them out of the, got to get them out of the way. And that's what that enzyme, phospholipase A2, does. And the protocols Dr. Kane uses with the butyrate and phosphatidylcholine revs up that enzyme to throw, you know, basically get that garbage out of the body. Again, these are the very long chain. And, you know, if you've ever barbecued or left grease out on the deal and, you know, left it over there in the heat or whatever, it'll get that rancid smell. Well, that is essentially these very long-chain fatty acids. They're oxidized. That's what rancid means. It's their rust, biological rust, and they wreak havoc in the body. We've seen studies where we have people eat, you know, some very greasy foods, fried foods specifically, and we see the inflammation in the blood vessels within hours.
Really?
After, oh yeah, it's a very yeah. Well, one of my hobbies is making biodiesel, and I used discarded oil from fryers, and I would have to tell you that is a singular best incentive that I've ever had for me personally, not eating any fried food. But I grew up in the South, and I like my fried okra and fried chicken, so it's been a transition for me as well. So,
how does someone know if they have that liver enzyme? I didn't know I had that liver enzyme problem. How do you find out?
Well, you can actually determine levels, or again, prescribe to do, you know, do the whole Patricia Kane protocol, the PK protocol, which is at pkprotocol.com, and then you'll have the appropriate systematic way of reviewing all these, and you know she'll be able to consult with your physician, honestly educate your physician. And allow your physician to be the hero in treating an otherwise probably unresolvable problem with the health issues that many patients present with.
So we need that. We've left out one thing. We haven't talked about Dan Cho and his the work that you guys do over there with blood viscosity.
Yep.
So we've got about 8 minutes.
Yes, this has been a fascinating area, and it's allowed me to save lives. That sounds a little braggadocious, but literally, I had an incident. I'll be very eye-opening. When I was an intern, I had a patient who was 67 years old. He had a blood clot. I was an intern, so I had to have everything checked by another doctor. And I had a hematologist oncologist, and we'd put them on warfarin, which you've recently been on, and we had them at the appropriate level. And he told me, this was a Sunday, I'll never forget it, he says, you can discharge him. He's safe. He can go. So I discharge him on Sunday morning. He's walking out the parking lot to his car. A blood clot dislodges from his groin, goes up through his right heart, hits his lung, and he dies instantly.
Wow.
Yep.
So what could you have done that would change that?
Well, what that told me, and I another colleague of mine actually told me, hey, that patient you just discharged is, you know, he just went down in the parking lot. I went down the emergency room where they had wheeled him in, and I tried to help to resuscitate him, but we weren't able to. And so the bottom line here was that It was a wake-up. It showed me drastic deficiencies in our current medical diagnostics, specifically on the number one killer in industrialized nations, and that's a blood clot. It's purely academic. If it happens in your brain, we call a brain stroke or a brain attack. If it calls, if it happens in your heart, it's a heart attack. And then if it hits your lungs, we call it a pulmonary emboli. But this is definitely the silent killer. Over 300,000 patients undiagnosed die from it. So what I found out, again, that measuring the thickness of blood. Remember I said earlier, there's over 300 risk factors. They all make your blood thick. So I'm pretty simplistic in my thinking. So I thought, well, if we can look at someone's blood viscosity, I can tell whether they're in a green or a safe zone or yellow, maybe danger, and then red if they're in a critical value. And this was all the research done by Dr. the late Ken Kinsey, cardiologist who'd worked on over 100 different medical patents, and then worked with a physics, Dr. Young Cho. And so I've been fortunate to work with them, been associated with them, and working along to develop it's called the Hemothix. And that is it's an FDA-approved method for determining how thick your blood is. And that's the CEO of the company that distributes the machine is Health On Vector, Dan Cho. And again, I've been fortunate to work with him for over the last 10 years or so. And again, this does not say anything against the current leaders in cardiovascular disease. All we're saying is that the starting line begins in the blood, that the initial insult, the initial trigger for the heart disease to begin is when the blood becomes thick.
The things that we're doing out of all the things that I'm doing, is there a specific thing? How is my blood? I don't remember.
Well, your blood actually was perfect. You were on warfarin at the time. Warfarin does somehow decrease the thickness of blood. That's actually one of the better things of it. But it also has some other deleterious adverse side, risk factors to it. But so the things that you're currently doing that will, and we're not talking about decreasing your ability to form a blood clot if you cut yourself, but the actual physical thickness. And it's a little dramatic, but, a lot of people with heart disease and strokes have blood that's very thick. It's like ketchup. I donate blood, and that's one thing, if I may, I think we call this a shameless plug. If there's one thing that I can share is that a person who donates blood their lifetime will have an 88 to 90% reduction in lifetime cardiovascular and cerebrovascular diseases. That means if you donate blood, and I think it's so important that we talk to our kids in high school, college, get them into the routine of, donating blood, assuming they don't have any things that would, disqualify them for donating blood, because that is it's good for humanity, it's philanthropic, and it also is selfish and is a very cost-effective way in to prevent, heart disease as well as strokes for that patient or that citizen.
How old do you have to be to do that?
Well, we commonly have blood drives that occur in high schools. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've taken up questions the whole time, and I promise to let you talk about whatever you wanted to. We've got about 3 minutes, so you can take that time and talk about whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I think the blood viscosity and donating blood, you know, women, Framingham, one of the largest cardiovascular studies, not one menstruating female ever had a heart attack. So what I'd like to also share with all the female listeners is that once you have a hysterectomy or have menopause, then it's very important for you, especially if you have a history of heart disease in your family, to donate blood if you can. And that be a very careful and cost-effective way for you to do that. If we had identical twins, a male and a female, and one went into menopause or had a hysterectomy, within 2 years, she would catch up with the risk factors that her sibling had. So, again, it ties into the blood viscosity and the ability to donate blood. You're producing a new population of red blood cells that are softer, more formable, and they're not going to cause they'll cause less damage to the inside of your blood vessels as your heart pumps. It's been very well documented.
So at this past, I've given blood I gave blood most of my life, and we only have about 2 minutes. My producer just came in. Well, 1 minute maybe. So maybe I just better, we better wrap it up. Tell us where we can find Patricia Kane, and tell us where we can find Dan Cho, and tell us where we can find Essentia, please.
Well, Essentia is EssentiaWater.com, E-S-S-E-N-T-I-A, water.com. Patricia Kane, PKProtocol.com. Also bodybio.com, and then Health On Vector, and that's health, and then on, O-N, vector, V-E-C-T-O-R.com. We also have a third-party repository online, which I forget the web link, but you can be directed to that through that website, Health On Vector, that
what do you mean,
gives you all the scientific research.
What do you mean, third-party repository? I've never heard you say that. What does that mean?
Oh, it's just simply a non-commercial archive of all the research that's been done on blood viscosity. So, you know, anybody can go and download the articles free of charge. It's just a community service to help familiarize patients and physicians about the significance of whole blood viscosity.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hallsworth, for coming on my show. I mean, I can, as you know, I could pick your brain for hours, and I'm like a sponge for knowledge. Thank you for taking the time to come on my show.
Well, thank you, Eva, and thank you for practicing what you preach.
Thank you.
You know, you really do. You do walk your talk.
I try. It's hard sometimes.
No, that's just my perspective, and I've only known you for the last couple of months, but that's very honorable from my vantage point.
Thank you, and have a good weekend, and good night.
Thank you.